So you have to give a presentation at work or at school or at university, or maybe you've got a YouTube channel and you want to start doing pieces to camera like I'm doing here, or you've signed up to talk at a conference and some part of you is nerve-wracked by that. In this video, I'm going to give you 10 general pointers for what you can do to thrive in those situations, to actually enjoy those situations rather than see them as something that you dread, which I know a lot of people do. One of the things I sell at the academic agency is the Foundations of Rhetoric course. That is one part of the trivium. But what is rhetoric? Rhetoric is the art of persuasion. But really, when you start drilling down into it, it's about human psychology. It's about how people think, what it is, what buttons it is that you can press to get people to see things in the same way as you. And generally speaking, when you're giving a presentation, whether it is an explicit pitch or, whether it's more subtle, you're just giving an argument, maybe it's an academic conference and you just want to persuade people of your point of view, this is what you're engaged in. And it's more than simply clear writing, which I go through in Foundations of Writing, and it's more than simply logic. Okay, if it was just writing and logic, the world would be a lot simpler. But human beings are complex, and there's all sorts of other things that buttons that you need to press to truly bring people over to your point of view. So I'm going to now give a number of different pointers here. The first one is when you are, well, it doesn't matter if you're speaking to camera like this or you're giving a talk in front of, let's say, 1,000 people, 100 people, 50 people, it doesn't really matter how big the crowd is. What you should do is act as if you're talking to a friend in a cafe or, in an armchair at home. But I would say in a cafe because that is a public setting. So, there's maybe some certain things you wouldn't do in a cafe that you would do at home. But generally speaking, you want to try to adopt the tone that you're talking to a friend. Okay. And that does a number of things. It kind of, when you're talking to a friend, you put things in your own words, you're a little bit more yourself, you're relaxed, and all those sorts of things. And I think that advice of, act like you're just talking to a friend is probably a little bit better than just be yourself or act naturally, because a lot of people might be thinking, well, okay, what if I'm a spurg or something like that? Whereas if you're just talking to a friend, you're not really thinking in that self-conscious way. You'll just be you are actually just being yourself. So that's why I say talk as if you're talking to a friend in a cafe. Okay. Second thing that can really put you on ease, because a lot of the issues when people are giving a public speech is that they worry about, they become self-conscious, they're worried about their confidence, they're worried about it going badly, they're worried about what other people think. And these are all the things that induce anxiety in people. So one of the best things that you can do is to keep on reminding yourself that you have absolutely nothing to prove. Okay? You've got nothing to prove. Just tell yourself that you are not, you are going there to convey some information or to, make people's lives better or something like that. You are not there to try to prove yourself to that audience or to whoever it is, right, that watches the video or whatever else. You've got nothing to prove. And as long as you remember that, it will help you not worry about all those other things. It will just completely eradicate all of those nerves, especially if you're talking to a friend and your mates, you've got nothing to prove to your friend either, because you just know each other already. And that just makes you self-relax. And the more relaxed you are, the more relaxed you can be talking, to a camera like this or talking to a real life audience. Third thing that will really truly help is if you know your stuff properly. Okay, whatever it is, and I don't know what you're going to give your presentation on, but being, in the corporate world, they'd be like become that subject matter expert, horrible corporate speak, but it really does help to know your stuff. because this, knowing your stuff in an area, gives you a natural authority that will carry you and carry the topic and carry the whole feel of the thing through the presentation, through the talk. What you must not do is to try to appear authoritative. Okay? Remember, you're talking to a friend in the cafe. Now, if you were in a cafe talking to your mate and you kept on trying to put yourself above that friend or be like, I am an authority over you, there's something off-putting about that. When people try to adopt a kind of false authority, people can detect that. You put your, one, it's inauthentic and you're putting it on. Two, you can kind of rub people up the wrong way. Ideally, you're trying to meet them where they are, as opposed to I'm the big authority and I'm talking down like that, okay? And it so knowing your stuff, but doing so in a way where you're talking to your friend, okay? Fourth thing is a little bit of humor can help any presentation. It can help, you know, I've given so many talks, hundreds of talks and lectures, little joke at the start, little anecdote, little something to help ease the room can help. Right, it can help people like you and warm to you, which is what you're one of the things that you want. It can help put the audience at ease. Oh, this is a this guy who can have a laugh, etc. But it should never really be your concern whether those people are laughing or not. You know, remember, you're there to give a presentation. It's not a stand-up comedy routine, right? You're not there to be like a funny guy. Okay, so you know you shouldn't get caught up on, you know, preparing jokes, or I'm going to do a funny bit there, then you'll start worrying about if people laugh or not. Really, unless the little humor comes naturally to you, unless it's something that you would normally do, I wouldn't try like setting up jokes, because setting up a joke can obviously fall flat and then it's hard to recover from, then you're worried about it. So I wouldn't really worry about that. I would just, like, again, just be your natural self. If you're the sort of person who makes a little joke or a little snide comment here and there or something, that will, that humor will be there and it will help people warm towards you, hopefully. But it's not, it shouldn't be the be all and end all. I wouldn't get caught up on humor. Okay. Your ancient concern should be my fifth point, which is authenticity. Now, I think that authenticity is really important, because if you're authentic, you're truly being yourself. Okay, it means that you are, people can pick up on fakery. Okay, and now you'll get different advice on this, especially in America. In America, they seem to love the, or at least the corporate world loves the, like the slick salesman, the American style hard sell. He's slick. He never says I'm an R, and all of his sentences are perfect, and he knows exactly what to say at every point. To me, I mean, it could be because of my British background, my general sensibilities or my academic background. But I also think that my preference for authenticity means that I'm always picking up on an air of fakery, on an air of performance. What are you trying to sell? Well, like, what, like, why are you talking? Why are you trying to sell me? This is not a real person. This is somebody putting on a performance. So for me, I always think, like, there's a lot of advice out there. Don't say I'm an R, cut all of that stuff out, you know, do this sort of stuff with your hands. You know, I just said there. That's because I'm thinking. Well, you do that when you think as well. So, okay, I want you to relate to me as a person. So I'm not really caught up on if I say I'm or are. Okay? I mean, you could do that thing where instead of saying I'm an R, you can go. But to me, this is like the world of the TED talk, or like some Indian kind of sales guru telling me, you know, I've never really been for that. And I always think that, certainly in this country, I mean, I would say it's probably true in America as well, authenticity will actually carry the day than that kind of slick, never makes a mistake, never puts a foot, super professional type guy. I think people want to know who you really are. And those little bits of human error, it's like, well, this guy isn't, you know, he's not perfect. He's, you know, and because nobody's perfect, and therefore you're easier to relate to. I've always thought that. And why is it important for people to like you when you're giving talks? Well, I mean, in the literature around persuasion and around influence and around marketing and what really pushes people's buttons, they talk about six different things. In classical rhetoric, you'd say this is the ethos part of the package, right? Ethos just means the person's character. Can you trust them? Now, one part of trust is authority, which I've already touched on. Another part of trust is, do I like this person? Do I relate to this person? Could I be friends with this person at some level? Okay. And if you think, well, they know what they're on about, and I kind of like them, and I can kind of laugh at some of their jokes, you've already built something like a little bit of trust with somebody. Okay. Incidentally, if you want the other parts of, the six parts of persuasion, another one is reciprocity. That is basically, what am I getting from this? Like, is this a fair trade? If I give this guy, you know, if I agree with his argument, what am I getting in return? Or if I pay for this good that this guy is trying to sell me, what am I getting back? In typical corporate speak, you'd say, well, what's the value proposition? What's the ROI? What's the return on investment? So that's number one. And people want value as well for what they're getting. That's the reciprocity part. Another part is commitment. Now, the part I said about knowing your stuff, if you really know your stuff, you're basically telling people that you are committed to this thing. This is something that you've really thought about. This is something that's important to you. You're consistent about this and you're committed to this thing. Okay? Ideally, if all of the nodes of persuasion are being checked properly, you're building up a picture in that person's mind that, you know, when they take a punt on you, it's not that much of a risk because they're committed to it. They're consistent on it. They're not some quick little scam merchant trying to get away with a fast one or something. This is something that's like here to last or something like that. Okay. This is why in adverts, companies will always be like, oh, well, we've been brewing Coca-Cola since 1895. Like they always try to, you know, establish all of this time ago. That means they've been committed to selling, you know, soda beverages since the 19th century. And every company does this. They just try to, you know, we're proud of our heritage of, you know, brewing beer all the way back to 1695 or something. So, yeah, that is the commitment part. Another part is social proof. Now, in the age of social media, if you're making videos on YouTube, of course, there's a lot of social proof around how many people have liked the video, how many people are talking under it, et cetera, et cetera. But when you're in a kind of hall situation, like I said, you know, the little joke, and if everybody laughs or if everybody's with you or, you know, a little murmur, that basically is, again, telling the people who are in the crowd, oh, well, at least some people are with this guy. Therefore, I can be with this guy as well. So people are shallow. They're kind of herd creatures. So, you know, if some people are willing to go along with a guy, it will help other people go along with a guy as well, or woman, you know, whoever happens to be the speaker. You know, there was a famous test. What was it called? The Escher test, where, you know, nobody in the room would dare contradict the authority until one person put their hand up. Okay. And you know, I can't remember exactly what the test was. It was like, I think it was like these two lines are parallel, but like clearly they weren't. And yet the authority figure in the room was saying like, these two lines are parallel. Nobody would dare kind of speak out until that guy said, well, hold on a second, they're not. And then that gave the courage to the next guy to stick their hand up and the next guy and the next guy. It's basically that effect. You know, I am Spartacus. It's that effect, in a way, the social proof. And finally, there's scarcity, which is the thing that you're getting is a secret, or it's rare, or it's hard to come by. You know, I'm letting you in on a little secret here. Not many people know this. Or time is running out. Time is running out. If you don't do it right now, this is your last chance to do this. Time is running out. These are all the little tricks that marketers play on all of the time. But it is an important part of influence. Now, obviously, some of those things are, you know, if you're making a pitch, if you're there to flog something, to sell something, obviously, those are some of the things that you can build into that. Let's get on. So the sixth thing I have here is, okay, when you're giving a presentation, especially if it's to a room of strangers, or if it's to an audience that you don't know that well, or that you haven't built up yourself, right? I mean, it's a little bit different, you know, on YouTube. I've got 128,000 people who subscribe to me on here. Therefore, they've already got some investment in me, right? Which lessens the risk of what I'm about to say, because I've already got some people on my side. Still, it doesn't fully mitigate this risk that I'm about to talk about. And this is something I talk about at length in Foundations of Rhetoric as well. Direct attacks on another individual are always, always high risk. Always. Because if you make any part of the talk about your attack on this person, it then becomes a case of you versus him. You, as the speaker, will then be on trial as much as the person you're attacking. Okay, and people naturally do this. It's like, right, now we're in a duel. Now I have to pick sides. Okay, so the risk of a backlash is much higher when people do this. Okay, and it doesn't matter who that person is you're attacking. Could be someone as well known as Donald Trump or someone like that. Could be, you're here on YouTube, it could be like another YouTuber, something like this. But direct attacks on other people, extremely high risk, almost certainly will cause some backlash, okay? Better generally to cast the criticism either in a kind of neutral diagnostic mode, mentioning no names, okay? Like, I could have started this video saying, like, this YouTuber is terrible at doing YouTube. I've listened to his stories and I've watched his videos, and his presentation style frankly sucks. Here, I'm going to do a better version, or something like this, okay? Automatically, whoever that is I'm attacking, you're saying, well, now it's me versus them. It's my authority versus his authority, okay? You don't, generally, that's not a game you want to play, especially when often that person may be more famous, more influential, more well-liked than you are. So you're already starting in a position of disadvantage. So this is something that in my years of doing YouTube, I've never understood why people do it. People have done it to me in the past, but I've never seen it. I've just never seen it go well for people to attack me in that way. You know, in the few times I've done it, I've always regretted it as well. I just think it's generally a bad idea to engage in that sort of thing. The best thing that you can do is enter into what I call the spirit of intellectual charity. Okay. Here, you want to be almost like a kind of giving a friendly corrective, as if you're trying to find a solution together. We're on the same side here, guys. There's a problem. I see it a little bit differently. How about we do it this way instead? And that way, you're giving people permission not to take sides, and you're giving people permission to come on board with you. You're giving people who like that person that you're criticizing, right, permission that, well, actually, if I listen to you, that doesn't mean I'm rejecting them, all these sorts of things. And the biggest question I have to ask, if you disagree with what I'm saying here is, why risk losing half the room? Why risk losing half the room is the question. And I mean, I've seen this in so many different scenarios. It's unreal. People who kind of like make little political jokes when they're in a room of strangers, things like that. And it's just never a good idea. Okay. Seventh thing. If you're given a slot for 30 minutes, prepare for 20. If you're given a 60-minute slot, as I very often have been in my life, it's often like an hour's slot, which is quite a lot of time to fill. Prep for 45 minutes. Why? First thing, nobody ever in the history of conferences or has ever complained that a talk finishes early. Okay. Now, obviously, if you're scheduled to speak for 60 minutes and you finish after 5 minutes, that's too early, right? What I'm saying is if somebody finishes like 10 minutes early, I've never seen anybody complain. They're desperate to get to coffee. They want to go for a loo break. They want to chat. They want to have a fag. There's so many other things people want to get on with. Okay. So I've never seen anybody complain for a talk go on too long. That's the first thing. Also, if you finish up early, you can always do Q&A, in which case, it's up to the compere, whoever's there to finish up on time, or, everybody's then on the same board. We got 10 minutes to fill here. We can do a little back and forth, but we all know we're off for coffee in 10 minutes. Okay. Obviously this is more relevant to a public talk than talking on YouTube, but I would also say on YouTube, there's no point padding out, right? There's no point. People really obsess about like the time length of the video. How can I game the algo to do it? Is it 10 minutes? Is it 15? Is it 20? Look, if your video only needs to be 20 minutes long, don't make it an hour long. Simple. Streams are a different thing, especially when you're in conversation with other people. They're a slightly different activity, in my view, a stream. A stream can be more social. A stream can be more a kind of community thing, but generally, or you could be like review, like I often on this channel review footage, which takes more time. Okay, but generally, if you're there to make a point to camera in a video, don't outstay your welcome. Okay, but what's the most important thing here besides all of this? You will almost certainly take longer than the time you've prepared for. So when I say if you've got 60 minutes, prepare for 45, don't be surprised if you take 50 minutes to do the stuff. Even if you've rehearsed it, even if you don't know what's going to happen on the day. On the day, something is bound to, like, projector doesn't work, somebody's dicking about with a USB stick. We've all been there, okay? That people are late back into the venue. You know, if you're giving lectures like I used to, some students dragging themselves in 5 minutes in, you know, alarm bell goes off. You don't know what can happen that can kind of disturb your best laid plans, for one. But also, you will take longer than you prep for. Guaranteed. It's just the way of things. It's like a weird law of giving talks, okay? So, yeah. 60 minutes, prepare for 45, 30 minutes, prepare for 20. And if you finish after 25 and nobody has any questions, nobody will hold that against you, okay? Unless, obviously, you tanked or something like that. But if you follow this advice, hopefully you wouldn't have tanked. Eighth thing, and this relates to something I said earlier on, is try to know the topic or subject area rather than what I would call learning the talk, okay? There's a difference between knowing a topic and learning a talk. Now, if you do this, it will help with your natural authority that I was talking about earlier on. It will also kind of, how can I put this? People pick up on things. People aren't, like, they've got like a sixth sense. They can pick up on things. If you're bullshitting them, if they get a sense that this person only really knows the stuff that's on these slides, they only really know, like, their idea is paper thin, right? Their knowledge of this topic only extends to this 10-minute presentation that they're giving me. They've just learned it on the train on the way here. People would pick up on that sort of stuff. And the best warding against that is to just make sure it's not true, by embodying that, being that subject matter expert, okay? Everybody has witnessed a talk like the one I just mentioned. You know, some health and safety training thing where, you know, or some, it doesn't matter what it is, some HR woman, whatever. Everybody has experienced a talk where you know, they know, and everybody in the room knows, this person knows nothing beyond the stuff that's on those slides. Like, they don't even have a basic curiosity to try to find out more about the thing that they're there to talk about. I have seen so many talks like that, and you always know. People always know and pick up on it. And those are the sorts of talks you can't get away, wait to get away from. So if you don't do that, it'll help with your confidence as well, because you'll know what you're on about. A little exercise you can do to see what the difference is actually try giving a talk just to yourself in the mirror, or to your wife or something, or to your mother, or to your child, if you're a mum or dad. Give them a talk about something that you love and know really well. Could be your favorite movie, favorite video game. If you're Carl Benjamin, it could be what's that thing he plays, Warhammer, right? Just something that you really love and you're really passionate about it. And see what the difference is. When you're really into the thing, that carries over. And ideally, you want that sense of what you're really into to carry over into whatever you're talking about, because it will help with all those other things. Okay. Next thing. It is better to already embody the qualities you want on that stage or in that video than it is to try to be them. Again, authenticity. To me, authenticity is everything. But not just to me, to everybody, authenticity is everything. Everybody can sense a fake, right? So you don't want to try. Oh, I'm going to try to be confident. I'm going to try to be calm. Because if you're trying, it means you're not though. It means you're not those things. You're aspiring to those things, but you're not those things. What you want to... It's not that you hope to be confident or that you wish to be calm. It's that you are confident and you are calm. Why are you calm and confident? Because you're a calm and confident person, and that's just what they do. So this can be difficult, especially if you're not a calm and confident person, okay? But there are ways that you can bring it about. Again, I mean, when I was a lot younger, in my early 20s, so I'm in my early 40s now, so I'm talking like 20 years ago, there was an exercise that you could do where you'd step into the circle of excellence. Okay, now this will sound ridiculous to some people, but forget those people, they're not important. If this works, the thing that's important is you. Okay, so let's just pretend the qualities you want to embody is you want to be authoritative, calm and confident in this talk. Knowledgeable, authoritative, calm and confident. Let's say those are the four qualities you wish to embody. Put those qualities into a circle, okay? You step into that circle and you feel yourself absorbing those qualities. As they come into you, you feel yourself embodying them. You feel yourself becoming authoritative, you feel the knowledge, you feel how calm you are, you feel how confident you are, okay? And again, there's a huge difference between actual confidence and, you know, like faux confidence. You know, it's like being confident isn't like, oh yeah, I'm the Fonz here, guys, okay? Everybody can pick up on that kind of fake, that fakery. Talking about actually embodying these qualities. And you'll be surprised how effective that little technique I just shared with you is, especially if you do it more than once and you get used to doing it. First of all, you might feel a little bit silly, right? But then eventually you'll forget you've ever done it. In fact, until I actually started talking about this, I completely forgot that I used to do that. But it really did help. Probably got me jobs, you know, probably got me through job interviews, so many presentations I had to give to get jobs in this day and age. So, you know, all of these things help. And then eventually you won't have to do it anymore. You will just have those qualities, having done it enough. Okay. Final thing. And here's a question a lot of people might ask as the first question. I leave it for the last question. Should you have a script? Should you write down everything you want to say? Should you just do it off the cuff, right? Just whatever comes into your head? Or should you have notes? Truth is, doesn't matter. Doesn't matter. A script where you've actually written down everything you're going to say and you just read it off a piece of paper or a PowerPoint, right? A PowerPoint template or sometimes both. Sometimes you'll have both a PowerPoint and a script. They can help with timing. They can help with timing. And I've given many talks where I have written the script because I was worried about being sure I finish in the 45 minutes and I wanted to, and if it's all written down. But, you know, and you can actually find some of those talks I've given on YouTube. You can also see that, well, I kind of come to the script and then I kind of go off script a bit and I have a bit of a back and forth. But like, it's not like the only thing I do. It's just to help me get back on track. But it's not paramount or anything like that. It's just sometimes you might feel like you might need one. I've never used notes in all the time I've ever given talk. You know, people have those cards, those kind of flashcards or whatever. I've never done that. Why have I never done that? It's because I always just envision dropping them, or oh no, they're out of order. Oh no, now I messed up. So to me, I've never got why people, like, whatever works for you. If the cards work for you, do it. For me, I've never enjoyed it. In fact, this video is the first time I've ever used cards. I don't know if you noticed, maybe you did notice, these are my notes. I've never done that ever before. And the reason I just told you. And why did I do them for this video? I thought, well, why not? Let's just try to show you that it truly doesn't matter if you have a script or you use notes or you're off the top of your head, okay? As long as you know the subject matter properly, as I mentioned earlier on, that's the thing that will carry you through, okay? Now, it's possible to know too much stuff about something. A lot of techie guys are like this, where they go into too much detail or they quickly get, you know, lost in the weeds. You don't want to do that. Okay, you would just want to know your stuff enough to talk well about it to at the appropriate register for the audience. Big difference between punters in the general public and an academic audience, for example. Big difference between complete strangers and a room of people that you kind of know. Okay, and there's a name for this. And in Foundations of Rhetoric, I talk all about the appropriate, you know, they talk about, you know, the ancient Greeks, they talked about the time and the place being as important for a particular talk. You know, the same talk in a different time and place could land completely differently. So you have to know your audience as well. Pitch it at the appropriate level for the audience. If you're in an organization, often the presentation you give to your fellow techies will be very different to the presentation you give to the C-level guys. C-level guys, they just want, you know, they just want the six bullet points. They don't want all the detail. They haven't got time. You want to chunk, you know, you've got to be able to chunk up and chunk down, they used to talk about. What else have we got here? Yeah. If you've done all the things, if you do all those other things I talked about in this video, whether you use a script, a PowerPoint, notes, cards, off, you know, no script at all, it won't really matter. It won't really matter because it's those other things, right? These other parts of influence that I talked about, people liking you and trusting you, your authority, to some extent, you know, showing your commitment to the thing, the value proposition or the reciprocity, and also, you know, scarcity is a little bit different. That's you know, how rare, you know, how rare the thing is. You can try to kind of create artificial scarcity, I guess, if it's, you know, to a penny advice or whatever. But the point is, these 10 things I've talked about, if you truly follow them, it won't really matter how you put your talk together, because it'll be those other things that are carrying the day. The fact that I'm talking to you like a friend, not like a kind of, I mean, there's so many other ways that people try to establish authority, for example. You know, I could have started the video and I could have said, I can make you better at speaking. Why? Because I have made 2,000 videos. I've had over 41 million views here. I've published 10 books and given hundreds of lectures all around the world. Therefore, I know what I'm talking about and you should listen to me. This is a very different way. This is like a hard sell, but feel what that felt like. It's like, oh, this guy is full of himself. This guy's a show off. This guy, I mean, all of those sorts of things you're risking. So it's better for what I would like to call a natural authority to come out as you're talking than to go in for, like, I'm going to read my CV here and put myself over. In pro wrestling, they say that's putting himself over, because there's something in listing your achievements or listing, you know, your credentials that smacks a little bit of insecurity or smacks a, what's this guy trying to prove to me? Or, oh, he thinks he's better than me, right? Why would you want to risk all of that? So it's better just to know your stuff and to have that natural authority carry through than to do what I just did there, which is list all these, oh yeah, the greater I am, you know, I'm the 16-time world champion. You know what I mean? It's just, there's a reason why in pro wrestling, it's the heels who talk like that. Okay, I think that'll do. If you're interested in more of this sort of stuff, Foundations of Rhetoric, I think, is one of the more underrated courses at the academic agency. I think it's actually one of the more, it's actually the most interesting of the three parts of the Trivium, because it gets into human psychology, gets into what makes people tick, what's the difference between making a sale and not making a sale? What turns people off and on to individuals? So all of these things, I would say, super interesting. So do pick up Foundations of Rhetoric, pick up the Trivium today. If you've enjoyed this, let me know what you made of it. If you give talks for a living, if you're like one of those people who like, I'm a public relations coach or something. If you're one of those Indian guys with the TED Talks headset who hates people umming and ahhing, and was like, oh, the trouble with this presentation is that you said okay about 3,000 times. Not like me. If you're one of those guys, I'd love to get your feedback on this. All right, ladies and gentlemen, join me again soon, and I'll catch you next time. If you like this video, be sure to like and subscribe. You can join the channel for thousands of hours of past shows in the archive and hundreds of videos. If you have any questions, you can leave a super chat or a super thanks, and I'll be sure to pick it up during my weekly office hours, which run every Tuesday afternoon. I also provide courses at the academic agency, which I encourage people to buy. Thousands of students now have taken the Trivium to improve their skills in writing, logic, and rhetoric. Just 3 of many courses available. Buy it now. But most importantly of all, friends, get out.